Matthew. He's probably not able to talk. Weingard.
What's up, dude?
How are you, man?
I'm alive. That's a good start, right?
Bro, I want to hear all about your thing. How's it going?
The mastermind?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is incredible.
I love the value that
people are bringing to it is great. I think they're getting a ton out of it. I've gotten some really great emails. And now it's just, I got slammed with the last minute production project that just killed the last month, knocked me out. I'm pushing the last of it out today. And then the platform that I had tried to build out, I tried a couple different platforms, including some WordPress plugins to build out AI. And I'm going to have to go with Kajabi. So I'm as soon as I finish emailing these out or mailing these out, I got to build that and get on that crap. It's been a season, man.
What's the mix of the people in it? Like what verticals?
Two DJs, beauty, well, three DJs, but we haven't seen one of them lately.
Beauty, that's not surprising.
A couple florists, a couple wedding planners, and a couple photographers
in your group.
Yep.
Love that. Awesome. That's a huge pollination. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited, and I'm learning a lot about what I can do in the next time I do one. That's going to be super beneficial. A lot of it is just accountability. It's just showing up every week and talking about the same things until people do shit. She feels a lot like this.
Shocker. I know. So shocking. So
just are you finding any commonalities? Like what's the struggle on the struggle bus?
A ton of lack of boundaries. Number one thing is lack of boundaries. Not understanding that protecting your emotional creative self is not only helpful but necessary in order to provide to deliver on the promises you make.
So the struggles that the people in the group are having is boundaries.
100% boundaries. That is the number one thing is people pleasing. Well, I just need to do this to please these people. I just need to do this because the client is dominating me because like I'm sitting through this client. I blew some shit and let a client in I shouldn't have. And this has been hell on earth. And it has turned, this is the thing that's kind of blown up production for me. And if I didn't need the money, I'd fire her in a heartbeat. But also I'm learning how to set boundaries along the way. The dog peeing on a carpet thing, right? They don't get to keep peeing on the carpet just because I've let them up until now. So yeah, boundaries are the number one thing people are freaking out about. The people pleasing means that they field inquiries that they don't need to be fielding. They start with the top of a funnel that lets everybody in because they don't want to be seen as offending anybody. Just across the board, that's the thing that's really hard to do. Right now we're doing, I think we may have done this in this group, in This Is Marketing, Seth Godin has the exercise where you build out two different axes mm-hmm. and you place yourself in a quadrant and then your competition. Mm-hmm. And everyone's just going to the easy shit. And we're, so I'm pushing them to dive a lot deeper and get more specific. Because what they're all doing, and I think all of us do this, is each axis that we create, we consider one end good and one end bad, right? Photographers going, well, it's pretty at one end and ugly at the other. Well, what the hell photographer is going to say? I take ugly photos, right? So getting them to see these axes that are where both ends are valuable, even if not to them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the benefit of my law school education. That's the one part I take away every day. Right. Is you always have to take the other side. Right. So yeah. No matter how noxious it is, you always have to take the other side and be ready to it. Yep. And so it's something I've taken away from my entire business career. Cause it's like that determination that this is good, the other is bad, is just such a bad trope for anybody. Look, as much as I, I rail against Voldemort all the time. And I think what he's doing is horrible for what he's assigned to. But I actually think he's quite brilliant. If he just stuck to his fucking lane, he's actually really brilliant, right? I mean, if he's about selling product and selling a specific service to that product, he's like doing all those things about, seasonality and things like that, and finding the psychographics of purchasing and all the studies that he does, like he's actually really brilliant, right? He's just applying it to the exact wrong thing. He's literally trying to, teach a fish to run a 50-yard dash. Not going to fucking work, right? But he can teach a fish to swim, right? He's really good at that, right? And he should. Yeah. He just should stick to his fucking lane. I'm sorry to use the F-bomb so much, Beth. But
did you say that?
Yeah. Sometimes you have a potty mouth too?
I use the F-bomb every day. Thank you.
I thought for sure. For some reason, I thought that you were more, I have the worst potty mouth.
Shit in my branding, and it pissed plenty of people off.
That's good. So there you go,
Matthew. Well, do you think that boundaries? I was thinking down the line of that. It's actually the root of it, though, is scarcity, right? Like scarcity mindset.
Well, there are a couple that I think are actually drowning in work. Right. Yeah, I think in the end, ultimately, it is some of it for a couple of these people. It's that like Puritan work ethic kind of thing that's turned. It's that waspy, I can't be disagreeable, happens a lot with these people. Even if it's two or three generations removed, it's this fear of being seen as disagreeable. It's this fear of somebody saying something behind their back, which probably ultimately is always scarcity, right? It's always, I'm afraid that I don't know what's happening behind my back and my business will implode on me because people are saying shit or whatever it is. But
it's a very hard trope to blow up because look, though reality is until you can take a step back, you can't say to your, because if you ask them, are you trying to just not disappoint anybody, right? Are you trying to just be, agreeable to everybody no matter what? So nobody says anything badly about you. But the reality is that you're going to disappoint someone, right? So the question is not a question of if you're going to disappoint someone. The question is who, right? And so you might as well make it your choice.
And choosing the right person?
Yeah, to disappoint and to try to satisfy, right? So because you have to choose. In life and in business and everything, you are not going to make everybody happy, right? So you might as well choose specifically who I know I'm going to disappoint. I know they are not. It is not going to work out for them, right? And so I think that's really healthy. So,
which by the way is just like the kind of healthy shit that you'd be doing in therapy anyway, right?
Nice.
Setting boundaries, recognizing you can't please everyone, you can't control the outcome, all that shit. Yeah. But they're all trying to control the wrong things instead of focusing on the art. And yes, and then the next step is just very clearly, I can't say no to that because I don't know what's coming next.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, you can. And I think it's imperative that you do far more frequently than you are.
Yeah, I'm so happy you're doing it. I'm so happy you're growing through it. And I'm glad you learn so much by teaching it. So, I just put up a podcast today, which is something I've talked about forever, but I also wanted to share it here because I just think it's sometimes it's like, I've been seeing, I don't know if you've been seeing this too in your worlds, right? But like, fundamental mistakes, like foundational mistakes, foundational way of like, wait a second, like you're confusing idea and design, or you're confusing design and production, you're confusing, you know, execution and production, you're confusing all of these things. Like, and you're just getting lost in the noise. And I guess when you get, you know, all discombobulated with all things that are happening in the world, you start to just lose those things. But it's so important to like, I think, I don't know, and hearing you talk, Weingard, and knowing that you're teaching and knowing you're out there. And I just think it's so important. And then I know, Andrea, you have your courses, and Beth, you're teaching, and Brian, you're getting ready for the collective. So all of you are going out and teaching. And I'm sure, Myron, you're going to go speak at some floral something or other. So like, you're all getting out there and teaching. And I think it's important to be able to have, whether you decide to incorporate it or not, is completely up to you, but to just make sure you understand that it is, you know, fundamental to every single creative business. These transitions and the stages are fundamental. I mean, I definitely thought them through, but I didn't make them up, right? They're, I mean, I made them up for me, but I didn't make them up as in they're the reality of how these things work, right? In terms of what you do and how you do them. And to make sure that like, we're all just specifically aware of potential to actual client. How do you get onto a client? How do you onboard a client? How do you go into be in Myron's world? How do you get lost? How do you have that idea stage? How do you make sure that people understand they can be free to share, you know, and how does that happen, whether or not, and I appreciate Beth that you're selling a known product, but a lot of times it's like this discovery process of finding it out that is creative, right? And so then after idea, well, here's a design, here's what we're gonna do. How does that come to be, right? And then once we have the design, then Wonderland is gone, right? So now we're in a different mindset. We're in get it done mindset, right? So what does that look like? You know, how do we go from now design, we've made it up, to let's make it happen, right? And then once we're getting ready to make it happen and all that preparation, how do we actually do it on the day, right? How do we actually get ready to execute flawlessly in our version of flawless, right? How do we make that happen? And to make sure that clients understand that they are at what stage they're at, and also how cleanly you can get through the transition. Like what I've been seeing more and more and more is like the transition's ugly. Like it's really freaking ugly. And that, by the way, is what that fundamentally, forget about the sales process and all the rest of it. That's what Voldemort doesn't understand, right? He doesn't understand the power of transition. He doesn't understand that it's not about just getting the client to say yes. It's about moving a client through a process, right? That is absolutely positively getting them from one place to another. So
I learned some interesting lessons this weekend. Well, it's funny, backing up for a second, it's funny how you say about how I'm selling a product. And it's definitely a challenge for me because I have to sell one way when I'm selling a product and then selling it my store and training my staff to sell at my store. And it's a different way of selling really when I'm selling my dressing services, you know, because definitely. I'm selling them something that's not tangible, right? I'm selling them a promise basically. But this weekend I did an amazing wedding in DC. And you would be happy to know that this was like the most I've charged ever. And she booked me. I did styling services for her and dressing services, and charged her $13,000, which was great. Not including travel. Travel was a little over 1,000, but she was a really difficult client for everyone involved in the wedding. And I learned some valuable lessons because I let her at some point dictate the process. She was so difficult to work with that she wouldn't follow anybody's timeline, anybody's rules. And I always, as part of my process to make my life easier on the day and her, and for the client to have a more enjoyable experience, we zoom in to their third fitting and their final fitting. We do the third fitting because we can control a lot more. Once you get to the final, it's kind of done, right? And she would not let me be involved in her fittings. Would not, refused. Yeah. And the dress was all fucked up. Like the dress was huge. She had her fitting a month before her wedding, her final fitting, which is the worst idea ever. The dress was huge. All of these things that I would have suggested to do to the dress to ensure that even if she lost weight, which she did, things could have been done to save it. The bustle was a mess. And I walked away from that. I should have been thrilled, but I walked away from it thinking, my process broke down and I let her dictate the process, and I can't ever let that happen again. The good news is the client was so happy. I actually just got this from the planner. Her mother was also really difficult. The mother just sent this. The only thing is, she said this to the planner. The only thing is, you didn't sell Beth enough. Honestly, going through this, I didn't appreciate how fantastic she would be. And I thought a bit of a splurge, but she was just great. On top of everything that she did with the dress, she kept us calm and happy. She's the best. And the mother said, this is high praise coming from Mary Rooney. So all in all, it was a huge success, but you know, you learn from everything. And I learned that I have to, my process is a process for a reason. And even if they're a freaking nightmare client and I don't want to deal with the bullshit, I have to push through and force them to follow the process.
Yeah, because you know better than they do.
Yeah. And really, it's ultimately selling. You're not just selling in the beginning to get them to book. You have to sell to them through the entire process on your process, or, you know, it's not just selling your service or your product, but it's selling yourself the whole entire time and what you're doing for them and how it's ultimately going to benefit them. Because at the end of the day, for me being involved in the fitting, listen, it's my time. Part of me was like, fine, I won't be involved in your fitting. I have a million other things to do, like cross it off my list. But then I'm like, the reason why it's in there is because it's going to make her wedding more enjoyable and it's going to make the experience better for me because I don't have to pick up the mess that is left behind from the dress not being what it should be.
So this is a fascinating concept, and it's a fascinating way of thinking about it in the sense of the following. Most people feel that, oh, I don't have to be part of your fitting, right? But then I do because of what's my process, right? The point of process being largely non-negotiable, like it can be flexible, slinky, but the point of it being non-negotiable, as in the ribs are there, is because it's not because of the reason of being rigid, not because that anything other than it's idiosyncratic to you. There are many stylists that wouldn't want to be at the fitting. They don't need to be, right? They can fix the dress. They feel like they can fix the dress at the end. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. You are like, I got to be there because I want to jump the gun. If there's an issue, I want to fix it. That's just you. So it's really important, because we get locked into the idea that somehow it makes sense, right? And because it makes sense to you, that it's logical, right? And then because of you, then you go all the way down the road. Once you've made that leap to say, it makes sense to me, therefore it is logical, therefore it is rational, and therefore we're gonna go down this whole place, then when someone tries to negotiate with you about what is rational, because if something's rational, we can negotiate it, right? Because if you think it's rational, then I can think it's rational. Then we're just having an agreement and a disagreement about rational, right? I think it's $10. You think it's $4. Okay, fine. We'll meet in the middle at $6 because it's rational, right? You have a value in your head. I have a value in your head. There's a rational value to it. The entire point of process is what, Weingard? He's not listening.
I am. The entire point of process, for me, it's about getting my best work.
Yeah, it's irrational. It's irrational. Your best work, the way you do it, is your way, right? It's irrational. And so therefore, yep, you cannot negotiate it, right? Because if you negotiate it, then it wasn't very important in the first place. Like if you don't show up to the fitting, right, then you already said you just completely wiped yourself away, because how can you negotiate something that's irrational? It's either works for you or it doesn't. And then otherwise, you just made it up. And if one thing isn't, by the way, the problem with negotiating from the irrational is that once you negotiate anything with irrational, it all goes to zero. Because it's, if you're not showing up, it's all negotiable or it's worth nothing, right? So then don't show up to the fitting. Then I guess I don't really want you to show up 4 hours before. Because if it's not that important for you to show up to the fitting, I guess you don't have to show up till 5 hours before. It could be four, it could be three, it could be two, right? Because now you made, without even knowing it, you made something irrational rational when it's not. So therefore its value goes to zero. It's just something that you should know over and over and over again, because we all do it. We all take this idiosyncrasy and we all turn it on its head and we live there. The only reason it works is because you say it works, because it's the way that you do it. It's because how you have to do it. It doesn't mean that, hey, I can show up to the third fitting. Maybe I can do it in a half hour instead of 2 hours, right? But I'm going to show up to the third fitting. Going to happen, right? Or else I'm going to walk away. And so that also tells you what you actually, so you're going to come back to me and you're like, Sean, so, okay, fine. You have to make sure that you, because I can tell you, it's not a good or bad thing, but I can guarantee you that you have not done a good job at the start of telling your client, especially your styling clients, what's your hill you're going to die on, right? What's the hill you're going to die on, right? Because if you don't share with them what hill you're going to die on, right, they can't know. Why? It's irrational. It doesn't make any sense but to you, right? So if you don't say, if I don't go to the third fitting, I quit. And I'm keeping your money, by the way. You paid me the 13 and I quit because you breached and wouldn't let me at your fitting, right? So you have to be able to say that this is the hill I'm willing to die on, because if you don't, then they're going to put in what they think is your hill to die on, right? And question what you think it is because you didn't communicate it to them. So for like my going forward, right? And even for your existing clients, you literally tell them, if I'm not at the third fitting or whatever is important to you that I have to have, otherwise I quit, right? I have to have your approval. Brian says, I have to have your thoughts on, you know, mood and lighting. And Andrea says, we got to figure out venue first, right? If that doesn't happen, I keep your money and go home, right? And that is so critical, because when you put together the 8 stages and you put together the transitions, it all comes to the place of outrageous promise and outrageous demand, which is what makes it go, right? It is the reason I have outrageous promise and demand, right, is because it only makes sense to you. It's outrageous because it's only for you, right? It's not for the world. And the world doesn't necessarily need to go to the third fitting, right? You do. So the point of it is make sure that you have that communicated over and over and over again that, hey, yeah, I don't really care who you are, right? I don't care what you're about. I don't care how it's going to be. And, you know, if you tell me at the last that I'm not going to be there, because as nice as it was to hear what you did and how you overcame, it's a pyrrhic victory, right? Because it came at the expense of yourself, right? And you sucked it up and compromised yourself in order to do this, right? And it made it incredibly challenging for you. Did you succeed? So the idea, and you're like everybody else. The idea that you're going to succeed and do a great job for somebody, of course you are, right? That's the nature of the game. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in the business. And by the way, you have a client that's predisposed to be happy, right? So the idea of this is like, okay, you did what you said you would do. You sucked it up. You made it through. Great. Okay. Right. At what cost? Right. At what expense? Like that you can deal with difficult clients? Yeah, you can. But like, not for long, right? Not when you're doing these things that make your life hard and belittle you and make sure that you have to suffer, you know, the consequences of things that are you did not get the chance to fix, right? And then get blamed because they're not right, right? Which I'm sure happened. Yeah. And then you have to like figure out how to make that work.
No, the client was thrilled. She didn't really know. I mean, she was happy with her dress. She didn't know, but I'm looking at it thinking this could have been so much better. She could have been much more comfortable. Yeah. It was a win. They were thrilled. They were so happy. But in my mind, it wasn't a win because I knew it could have been so much better, but she doesn't know what she doesn't know.
Yeah.
But I just know. That's
even worse, to be perfectly honest.
No kidding. Because I'm like, yeah, it just, and thank God I was there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been getting a lot of people lately who've been challenging me on bridesmaids. They're like, we want to hire you for dressing service, but you don't have to do the bridesmaids. We just want you to do the bride. And I'm like, so I've been saying 100% no to that. That is 100% never in any world would that happen. But I have to be better at doing that with all aspects of my process.
Yeah. 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 No, not all aspects. You have to make sure that there are places you actually can't do it with all aspects of your process.
Yes.
You have to have, and the reason is something very, very specific about that. You have to have places where you can go to the edge, where you're consciously going to be wrong. That is the art of things. And that's, by the way, Weingard, what your group has to learn. There has to be a moment of conscious distrust, truly. There has to create tension. Every story needs tension. Every story needs, this might not work. Every story needs you to be able to push it.
There was a lot of tension leading up to this wedding.
That's yeah, but it has to be directed by you.
Is it distrust or uncertainty?
Both. Well, okay. Distrust means uncertainty. Means like, well, I hope it works out. I think it's going to work out. Distrust means it might not work out. She might not be the right person. I don't know if I'd made the right choice, right?
So you're saying I should have that with every client?
Consciously, absolutely.
Why?
Because heat creates purity. So you have to be able to move through and say whatever that stage might be with you have built a level of trust. You push the edge. Let me make it with like an interior design. So interior design, we want to do a lot of color, right? And so we're comfortable with reds and blues, but not necessarily yellows, right? And so you work it, you get certainty to floor plan, you get certainty to the other elements there. And then you're like, you have this, okay, we're ready to show you what we think. And then you push it hard with yellow, right? Then you push it hard with yellow because you got to see how much they don't like yellow, right? You got to see what it's going to be. You consciously are getting it wrong, right? So that you can see whether or not you're really digging in, whether you're really getting what they want for them, and you've pushed past the edge. And in that way, you're going to get, well, we don't really know about yellow. We love where the reds are. It's like, now you really know. And then you get the opportunity, because once you get that clarity, because you get that heat, then you get the opportunity for redemption. And the opportunity for redemption is the story, right? And the opportunity to then rebuild trust that you consciously broke, to say, and so, okay, I understand. And even though you led them up to it, hey, just want to push the edge here. We're going to make sure that you may not love everything. Just let you know, right?
But that is trust. That is certainty versus trust is two different things. I trust the individual to get me to where I want to go, but I don't know how that's going to look. Right. So like, that's a part of the creative process, but I don't think breaking trust, you can't come back from that. Once you break trust,
once they start to doubt whether or not you can do it, it gives you the opportunity to then solidify the fact that you're going to, right. You're exactly right. Let me be sure that what I'm speaking specifically, if you wholly break trust, that's the art of this. You're exactly right, Brian. Because what happens if you do it too early before you've built trust, before you've really established the fact that you know them, and you get it wrong? Like, who are you? What are you doing? You're not even doing this stuff. So you're exactly right. You have to build trust enough so that they have confidence that you actually do know them. And then you have to then be willing to say, okay, but I'm going to sacrifice a little bit. And it's an art. It's not a science. Right. It's an art of how much did you build, right? So that you're willing to take the step back in order for you to take four steps forward. I've seen it many, many, many times. And ones that are really good at it are that one. But you're exactly right. If you didn't build any trust, right? If you didn't build anything, you're gonna look like an asshole, right?
Yeah.
You're just gonna look like a jerk and I don't want to hire you. And I've seen that happen before too. Literally, I gave, just so you know, an exact thing. She is a mentee. I hooked her up with, and she's an art consultant, worked for Sotheby's for a long, long time, and literally was handing her, one of my designers is working on a 25,000 square foot house in Greenwich, Connecticut. And she had the opportunity to put art in it, right? You're talking about, and this is the one of four houses that they own. And instead of like having it, and by the way, had direction from my client as to what these guys wanted and didn't want, because they didn't take themselves too seriously. Even though they have a gajillion dollars, they didn't take themselves too seriously. So they want to have a sense of humor about it. What did she do? She put this whole deck together about classic art and classic and these big pieces and all this stuff. And it was completely unrelated to who they were. And so she blew it, right? She blew it and they were out. They were like, no, and my client had to overcome rather than put that together. She put together this beautiful deck, but just completely not for them. And here it was, this billionaire client, you know, said, we're not working with her, right? And so she blew easily $300,000-$400,000 in commissions because she didn't spend the time to set up the right amount of trust. Now, had she done that, right? Had she done and built a set of trust, could she have talked them into maybe something that's on the edge or not, but get to know what it would be? Yeah. But so I wanted to validate your point, Brian, that you got to be able to build trust in the beginning. You got to be able to really have that rock solid foundation. And that, getting back to you, Beth, that is because you've gone through 1, 2, 3 hills that you're willing to die on. Hills that you're willing to, like, we got the playlist, we got the lighting right, we got the kind of staging. Now I'm going to go and do whatever, right, that I'm going to come up with for you, Brian. But that's the place where you can push it, right? And I've seen great, great stuff happen in that conscious moment of distrust, because the resolution is just so much sweeter.
So maybe I missed it here, but again, this is one of those, can we be practical for a second so I understand? After which point have I established enough trust that, and where am I then showing that moment of breaking trust? Is it in the deliverables? Do I have to do multiple rounds?
If I were to be specific for you, it's we've nailed budget. We've nailed kind of what we're doing. You know, what are the materials we're using? What are the basic forms? What is all of that? And then I'm going to do some crazy shit, right? I'm going to maybe I'll do some crazy colors on papers, maybe some crazy cutouts, maybe some crazy things.
Okay.
It's going to push it past them. And they're going to be like, oh, this is a little too, right? And then I'll dial it back.
Yeah.
So it's a three-step process for you, right?
Makes sense.
That's the art of it. You have to say, what are my hills that I've died on? I died on budget. I died on materials. I died on basic shape and style, right? And now I'm ready to have a moment where I'm not willing to die, right? Where I'm willing to get you to be uncertain, right? That's the place where you can, because you want to have conscious, however you're doing it, you're trying to create tension so that there can ultimately be better resolution. That's the design process. Because otherwise, how are you going to get... The point of this is that people don't share. People don't share unless there's emotion involved, right? They share what their hopes and dreams are, but they don't give you the underneath. And when you get the underneath, that's when everything happens. When you get the uncertainties and the, oh my God, I really don't, or I do, when you get them hot, that's when you get what they really want, right? How they really want things. And that, I think, gives opportunity. And so that's the place where, you know, you can find real value. And because at the end of the day, the real question though is what's your goal, right? If your goal is just to get the job done, you're never creating distrust, right? If the goal is to just do a good job, right? And be that way, right? That makes you a cloud designer, and that's totally fine, right? Then you just do it basically to the limits of their understanding. If that's your goal, is to basically have great clients to be at the limit of their understanding, awesome. Then you would never do what I just said. But if your goal is to show them what they could never have seen without you, then you have to be willing to break trust.
So for people like Matthew and I, who may not have direct contact with the client, we're dealing with the planner.
I always do. I won't take it without.
So for the most part, I do too. But I have certain planners that don't let me communicate directly.
That's my first hill. That is so there you go. That is for you.
Can you do your best work under those circumstances?
No.
So don't take it.
There's no chance. There's literally no fucking chance I would ever have you for your styling services and what you know. Because
regardless of who you're with. That's not styling. I have to work directly with the client for styling services.
Even day of stuff. Like the point of like that level of expertise that they're getting just to talk to you, no disrespect to any planner out there, but you have seen so much and been part of so much that your ability to add value to what that day is going to be like is insane, not for you to not have access, right? Now, it doesn't mean you don't have access. You don't have to have unfettered access, meaning you talk to them without the planner, but you have to be willing, and they have to be willing to share with you. And I understand the leg on my ego, how planners just want it to go their way and fit you into the microcosm of it, but it just doesn't work at this point, right? You have too much to share. And there are certain things that if they are like, wait, you know, you're only going to give me an hour and a half to get ready, you know, 10 people, not going to work, right? And, you know, oh, but you can just bring in as many teams. Like there's just a physicality to it, right? No matter how many bodies are there, right? So the point of that is like, you have to have an opinion to have a seat at the table, right? So it's like, again, back to interior design. The whole point of this is architects and interior designers, right? So here's a great example directly relevant to you and to you, Brian, right? Is the following. Let's say the architect and the contractor and the client come up with the most beautiful recessed lighting plan for the dining room, right? The most beautiful, that the lighting is perfect, the angle of the ceiling is perfect. And it's remarkable because of, as an architectural concept, it's just spectacular. You know, ceiling lights and open lights and all the rest. It is genius, right? And then here comes the interior designer after the fact that says, that's the most beautiful like dining room ceiling recessed lighting plan I've ever seen, and completely wrong for the space. Completely wrong. And who's the one that's going to actually buy the table, put it in there, and make it work? The interior designer, right? So you literally now made her job incredibly hard. Would she make it work? Sure. Could it be as good as you say? Could it be as good as it should have been? No. Right? Will she be forever pissed off? Because had she been able to just say, hey guys, love what you're doing here. This is just incredible, but it doesn't work for this space. We need to do this. Now, if they ultimately decide to do that because whatever, whatever, at least she had a chance to have a voice, right? So that like, there's no say that, hey, they may override her and she has to deal with it, but at least she had the opportunity to make a change, right? And to deal with it. And so, and if she's not successful, she's not successful, but like having no voice, getting shut out of that process is what you should consider to get back down to business is a risk to you, right? Which would you rather have? A planner that lets you talk to bride and couple and everything else and make it go around and together you come up with the schedule, or the one that shoves the schedule down your throat? Which one's riskier for you?
Yeah.
So how much do you get paid to do it? By the way, so guess what I say all the time? Does risk have to get paid for? Yes, right? So well, do you charge the same amount of money for getting to be part of the process of doing the day of together, or do you, right, or the one that shoves it down your throat? Are those the same price? Yes, right? You charge the same money, you charge the same $10. So which one did you make more money from? You made more money from the one you had here because you had less risk. Right. Whether they took it or not, ultimately, if they don't listen to what you say, you have to deal with it. But at least you know, early, right? Here, you have to deal with something and you didn't have a voice. So here, you made less money, right? Because you took risk, right? Now, you may say, no, Sean, same price. And I got the same money at the end of the day. How much did you work, right? You worked so much harder here because you had a lot more risk, right? So risk has to get paid for. And what you just said, without even knowing it, is like, you just paid for all of it, all of it. So what should happen in a perfect world? This price should be 10 and this price should be 20. Risk has to get paid for it. Question is, who's going to pay for it? It is not a possibility that risk doesn't get paid for it. Not one, right? So the question is just not if it's getting paid for. The question is, who's paying for it? And I don't think you want to pay for it. So, and if you-
I can't even pay for my services, let alone my risk.
Well, yeah. So my point is like, if you don't charge a different price, what you have said is that there is zero risk between being present and not being present. And that is a fundamental untruth. So what you've just told somebody is to misperceive risk. I don't want you there, Beth. Just show up. Don't talk. I just talked to my planner. Don't talk to me, because you just priced that risk at zero, right? That's what I mean by self-inflicted pain. Mm-hmm. Because if you told somebody where there is risk, right, that they don't have to pay for it, you're willing to pay for it, then their perception of that risk is zero. So therefore, they won't pay for it. And they'll just make a choice. And only the best ones will say, yeah, we want you to talk to our brides and grooms because it makes our lives easier. But there's others that will say, yeah, I don't want that, right? But they're priced at the same. So because you've given the illusion of indifference where you don't have it, right, then you're the one who has to say, not so much. So hill you have to die on, because there is, right? There is risk and it's real and it sucks and it's not something you're willing to tolerate. So either you can be absolute about it, right? And you can say that I'm unwilling to do that if I don't have access, or there is a different price, your choice. And by the way, pricing risk is a big deal. The same designer that did the huge house, the same one now, just got another one. She just got paid real money not to be able to use pictures. Real money.
You mean like being able to photograph her work?
Can't photograph this job at all. She got paid $100,000 not to.
Amazing. God bless.
Risk has to get paid for. So I'm trying to say you can either turn it into money, turn it into decision, but you always have to take a look at risk, right? And that is part of knowing your process, knowing that what you're doing when you say these are the things I'm not willing to accept or not, is that that's not a risk I'm willing to take, right? If you don't say yes to this, that, or the other thing, if you don't say yes to me going to the third fitting, if you don't say yes to me having direct access, those are risks I'm not willing to take, right? So you can do it either way. You can say, you have to pay for them, right? Or I'm just not willing to take them at all, zero, no chance, right? Not going to stick my hand in the fireplace, mm-hmm. no matter what you pay me. You know, I mean, for me, it's like, it just goes back to fundamentals. I guess I'm on a fundamental kick today, but it's just about like making sure that you have this underpinning all of it, because you can always, the thing I guess that I'm struggling with is that I see people not having this to go back to, and not have the ability to return to the foundation. And so you get lost, right? When you feel like, you know, oh my God, what do I do? And you don't start from a place of like, well, wait a second, where are we? Like, what is my process? What is, how am I moving through these things? Then I can attack the problem. But it's like, okay, if I'm just going to attack the problem, like you're like lost in transition. You're not really, you know, you're solving the symptom and not the disease, right? So anyway. Yay. Well, I'm glad you made it through, Beth, with this woman. I hope that you don't have to ever do it again.
She has a sister. So we'll see. But, and the sister, this is a piece of work too. I'm getting the bride in her dress and I look over and the sister is hysterically crying. And I'm thinking, is she like emotional that her sister, like what is happening here? But then I looked at her and I'm like, this is not like a, I'm happy for you cry. It's a, something is wrong with me cry. And she was not happy with her dress. So I had to step away from the bride. I asked if they all needed a minute and the bride looked at me like, no, this is about me. Get me dressed right now. So I got the bride in a position where she was, you know, not standing there naked. And I was asked her if I could step away and talk to the sister and found out what the problem was and did my best to fix it. But this poor bride in the middle of, you know, her moment of getting dressed with her mom and her sister, the sister was crying hysterically because she didn't like her hair and makeup and didn't like the way her dress fit. And I was like, these people. But damn, we're all happy. So
I literally could do your guys' job for 15 seconds. Literally.
It's really amazing what we do.
It quite is.
Psychologists. We all have a psychology degree by, you know, osmosis or something.
Yeah. Yeah. In a real way. And I think to take that even to a bigger extreme is that, you know, you don't see the person. They're not seeing you as a person. They're seeing you as a means to whatever it is they want you to be. So can you look at me the way I need you to be looked at and solve this for me? And it's like, well, it doesn't really matter what you're really thinking.
Right. But I do love in situations like this where I walk in and I don't have that, unfortunately, again, because of my process, I don't have that much of a relationship, the relationship that I would like to have with them. But even if I, anyway, these people you can't develop a relationship with, but I think I walked in with them thinking of me more as like a servant or someone to serve them, but getting this message from the mom, I love that I flipped them and it completely changed.
Yeah. So I arrived that way if I were you.
Yeah.
When sister does call, then yeah, we're going to do it differently the next time. Like we're going to be doing it this way. Thank you.
And I'm charging you double.
Yes, you are.
And the Aztecs. Yep.
No, yes, you are. I trust me. So
why not? Now I know that they have it. I mean, I knew that they had it before, but now I really know that they have it.
Yeah. Yeah. They always do. Just whether, you know, anyone's going to pay for you to 13,000 for you to go to 14,000 by the time you're said and done to go down and do the work you're going to do. It's like, yeah, they have it. So there you go. So how goes the planning for the collective?
Coming together. It's coming together. I'm
actually working. Summertime, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We've got two. We've got one that's the recharge, we're calling it. So it's more of like a, I guess the best way to describe, I'm looking at it like it's three mechanics looking under your car, right, and trying to like, you know, assess what is working, what's not, what needs repair, kind of a thing. I loved your, I don't know if this was intended for me, but I love the idea of the investment, the $1,000 investment thing. I think it's too early for us to do that for this one. I mean, too late to do it on this one, but I broached it with the fellas and I think that's how we're going to move into it the next year.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, it wasn't specifically for you, but I've always loved the idea about where you're going to have a fund. You mean?
Yeah.
Oh God. I mean, yeah. I mean, absolutely. You guys are in such a tech forward world. Like, you right. know so much about like the things that are upcoming, and being able to fund that is so important. Right. I mean, it's just, for me, it's like, you can make this business go and you guys have this network, and you can decide the platform and the success of it all. And that just gives you a great chance. Right. And
100%. You
know, it's like, it's always been quite amazing to me. I mean, I've, you know, that the idea, by the way, was, you know, I think I gave it to Engage into the ladies, you know, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, because, and this just like, you know, as they were all there, it's like, you could be funding, you know, this whole group could be funding so many great opportunities and finding a market for them, right? All like, almost immediately. And that would be like, that just would have been super cool. So.
Yeah. But to your point, I feel like there's, as what you're talking about earlier, I'm do a little bit of individual, like one-on-one stuff with some of these DJ folks. And, it's the order, the fundamentals is so backwards, you know? And, what I'm finding now, back to like the scarcity mindset, is, people who are willing to, I don't know what the right word is, just compromise on the pricing for today. Mm-hmm. And then it screws them in the back end because of the,
bad,
you know, someone just taking a job and then wondering why for less, then getting a referral from those jobs. And then wondering why their clients wondering why, well, wait a minute, you were charging this. Cause of course they heard from that client of what they charged. And they're like, well, you know, and the argument is, well, it's a weekday, it's whatever. And I'm like, but it doesn't really change. You're devaluing the artistry by doing it that way. Right. Because it's, you're compromising on day of the week, which is just a scarcity mindset at the end of the day. So,
finale, baby.
Right. And so anyway, I'm seeing that over and over again where people are looking at it that way. And I think
it's interesting to me. So like that's because, you know, what's actually driving it, right? You know, what's actually really driving it is it's scarcity, but it's also fear. And right. not fear in the sense of like, oh my God, I could lose you and go away. Fear in the sense that if I told you what I was investing in, what my expectations of those investment would be, then I would have to share what my expectations of for that investment. You know, I use my price is 10, you're paying 8 for the 2 I want, right? I'm making an investment and making an investment. And just so you have it, what's fascinating to me, because I've done this a lot of different times in a lot of different ways. One lesson, if you're doing one-on-one, is that for every, just to take them at their word, that their price is 10 and that's what it costs. Whenever they discount, because they do and they will, that they have to write it down as a marketing investment. So they have to make a marketing column and they have to mark down every time they do that, right? Every single time and what it's going to be, right? And then they have to add in their actual marketing expense. And when they see it, and it's one of those things, it's kind of like, you know, when you think about, you know, all these businesses that stop you from subscriptions, like the little bit you don't pay attention to. But if every time you had to write down, well, I spent two here, then you'll be like, oh my God, I just spent like literally 6 figures on marketing because you did, right?
Well,
did you get your bang for your buck, right?
To drill it down even further, it's not even marketing necessarily. It's acquisition cost. That's even worse.
Yeah.
Then you're like, I just paid $2,000 for one person.
Right.
Like, did that make sense?
Yeah, exactly right. Both things are exactly there, exactly the same mindset. And so if you did just acquire that one person, then did you acquire that one person? Because every referral that they give you is at that price, right? Mm-hmm. So not your actual price. So that what did you actually make, right? So what are you acquiring? And how, I mean, all of those things are just kind of business 101 stuff, and getting people to actually write it down. Right. Is the effort. It's like a methodical thing. Something about putting it on, you know, in a spreadsheet or writing it down shows that you just made it real. Right. You just made that money that you just didn't get real. And that's always important. Right.
And I think the other thing too, is I'm finding a lot of folks that are excited that they've charged the most they've ever charged, mm-hmm. but they have no rationale for how they got there.
Right.
It was like, oh yeah, I got that. Well, what did you do? I mean, what's the,
that always makes me, by the way, just to let you know, that's why most people think I'm an asshole. Just like, because everyone says, well, I just charged the most I ever charged. And my answer is like, okay, wrong number. It's the wrong number. Like, you know, I know your expenses are. I know the kind of life you want to live, and I know how much you want to work. Wrong number, right? But I just charge people. Okay, so wrong number. That's the point of it. You don't have a sense of what you need to charge to feel good about what you've just done. And then you feel like I got more than I ever got because I went from the bottom to here, right? Then, but the number is here. Wrong number, right? So I guess you want to work 50 times a year, not 30, right? So,
and what's worse is when they go, when it's like $500 or $1,000 more. Right. Than where it was. I'm just like, oh, okay.
Well, good for you,
but
man.
That's half the advice in the industry right now is just raise your prices with no sense of why. No storytelling, no accountability, nothing.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, good luck with that. That I totally agree with. And it makes me sad every day, right? Because it ultimately is so destructive for those who don't really want to do the work, right? So it gives the illusion that if the passage of time allows me to charge more money, then I don't actually have to do the work to define value, right? Another year's gone by, my prices went up 10%, right? So like, that's lazy. So says who? Passage of time, make sure so you know, which says, by the way, if you did get better doing what you're doing, I appreciate the difference. It's a marginal conversation. If you got better at what you did for the first year to the second year, of course you did. Second year to third year, of course you did. But your 15th year to the 16th year, how much better did you get? Right? Mm-hmm. This eighth year to the ninth year, what are you talking about? Like, so you're the same as you were, right? So it's not like you've gotten materially better so that you can justify the fact that the passage of time has made you worth whatever increase you've charged. You're likely going to be doing roughly the same thing. So all that benefit of actually raising prices is only good for somebody who's just starting out. But for most people who've been doing it 5 years plus, just raising your prices because of the passage of time is actually insulting to the people you're currently working with who paid the price before. Because like what you're telling them is like, I got better, or the person who paid afterwards is like, what are you paying for? You got the same thing for more. Or same thing for less. Why would I, you know, all of those things are just silly to me. Just silly, silly, silly. So, but cancerous nonetheless.
Right.
Yay.
That's why I like the podcast that you did about the bait and the net and the
fish with a spear.
That was a great
episode. Yeah, I love that one. That's been one of my favorite for a while. I hadn't done a podcast for a while. That was a good one. Because it's hard. Look, it's really, really hard when you think about it. But on the other hand, everyone's in, I mean, even you, Beth. I mean, it's not like you're going to go sell 100,000 gowns, right? So you'd be lucky to sell 1,000, right? So.
I have a quick contract question.
Doesn't have to be quick.
That for what I've been finding that I'm getting in trouble with is travel. A lot of what we do is in New England, so we're driving. And so I was a year ago planning whatever the mileage was, but the 2023 mileage reimbursement is a fortune. It's like 67 cents a mile now. It went up from like 50 something. So should I just be adding a clause in my contract that says if mileage reimbursement or travel expenses go up a certain amount, that has to be charged back to the client?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's the way I think about expenses like that is like, if I wasn't doing this for you, I wouldn't be putting these miles on my car. I wouldn't be getting on a plane. I wouldn't be doing anything. So therefore, if you want me there, you have to pay for me to get there. It's not like it's going in my pocket, right? I'm not making money no matter what. It's what I need in order to get there. So travel to me is always just an expense to make it go, right? And The question is what's the travel going to be, right? And how it's going to be. And so again, back to interior design, could you hire most schleppers to move that $50,000 antique? Yeah, you definitely could. Good luck to you, right? They're going to scratch the floor and probably break it, right? Or you can pay the right amount of money to get the receiver, proper receiver, to move that antique. So it's up to you. So yeah, don't tell me either way. It's not your money, right?
Right. And it's, you know, we're just planning it so far in advance. In most cases, like a year in advance. And ultimately, it's my team. They need to be reimbursed for their, and me too. But, you know,
they need to be. Lots of changes. And I look, what you're trying to say is like within a bandwidth of something, I don't want to bother you with like nickel and diming you. But if that blows up, then I'm going to charge you. So what you're talking about is directly compared again to interior design. What happened in the beginning of 21, right? And 22 is like, you know, the supply chain issues, right? Literally shipping went from what was 1 to 10. And all of a sudden, if you had in your contract, I charge you 20% for shipping. And now all of a sudden shipping is literally the same amount as the what the expense is for the furnishings. So it's like, okay, I need to charge you more money. And they didn't, a lot of people didn't have it in their agreement, but it was very clear that the client was responsible for expenses, right? So they had to pay for it.
Right. We're dealing with that at my store right now.
So what you say is like within a bandwidth, we'll deal with it. If it's, you know, $5 cheaper, we make a little money, but if it's $5 more expensive, we'll pay for that. But beyond that, we're not dealing with it, right?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it sucks because there are certain ones that I can't go back now, but I can only affect what's going forward.
No, those kind of expenses suck. Because people think that you're making money on them, but you're not, right? All you're doing is passing it through, especially if you're charging a percentage. Right. Because you're just really just passing it through to them. And it's just a function of not wanting to send them 15 different bills that they're will drive them crazy. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And how goes the job, Katie?
I am officially drinking through a fire hose. I knew it wouldn't take long and it happened.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like what, give me one example, just because I'm curious.
Changing mindset to take care of customers is a daily constant that is blowing my mind. Just how we word things, how we communicate with people that pull out personal lines of credit in the $10 million range, like just...
About how you do it, how you're doing it differently than what you've done before, or
no, just like trying to get the team's mindset to shift that we're here for them. So like we send out this autoresponder that just constantly goes off, mm-hmm. and I'm like, why? And it's like, well, we'll get back to you in the order that your message was received. Well, duh.
Yeah.
Like I don't think we need to tell people that. It's kind of negative.
Yeah. And if I have like need a $10 million line of credit, likely as I'm not going to be happy hearing that.
Right. I mean, you just don't talk to people like that. And so it's just, you know, between that and just understanding like the business and with everything that's going on with banking, we are a regional bank. Regional banks are under the gun. And then like having to understand.
You're under the bazooka. Let's get real. Yeah. This is not a freaking revolver. Yeah. It's a bazooka.
So, you know, and part of it's just, I'm diving in. Like I had to get in and get after it and figure it out as I go and make it work. And so it's just been interesting when you're out there and, you know, last Thursday was a big day and I went to an event and got real FaceTime with people that I'd never met. And that's the first thing out of everyone's mouth. And so to be able to position and be able to think on my feet again, it's been a while since I've had to do that because I was so ingrained and used to what I'd been doing for so long that the answers just spewed out and now I have to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, but especially Arizona, right? Arizona is its own animal just because, you know, there's a lot of people who don't want to, who literally don't want to understand, right? Who literally are pushing whatever narrative they want. But the end of it is like, do you have liquidity or not? Like, are you running a good bank or you're not? And it's not like, you know, it's not a hard business to understand, not because it's not hard, but because it's been around forever.
Right.
So it's running good practices, doing those kind of that work. and having people that are like, where's your investments and how are you doing it? And look, this is also probably something you already know and too much out that way, but like, this is literally 30 years in the erosion of all the different things that are happening in banking and allowing banks to do things that they shouldn't have been able to do, right? And that where's conservative and where's not, what is it that you want to invest in? What are you not investing in? And look, I mean, I was a signature customer forever, right? But, you know, it didn't take but 4 years of crypto to destroy the bank, right? So it's like, what can you do? And the edges of that make it fascinating, right? Because it is related to your business, right? It's related to the way that you're running your banking business, but it also happens to be related to everybody else's business. Definitely happens to really to create a business. And what that's about is like, okay, you know, what are you doing to get out there? And, you know, because there's always an element of where's your risk and where's your, because it's not a, you don't want to be taking risk everywhere, right? And you never want to take a risk that could collapse something, but you do want to take risk. Right. So you do want to push that envelope. And that is the lesson, right? Is okay, how do I take enough of a risk where it's could suck if we were wrong, right? But it won't kill us. Right. And that's kind of what every regional bank has to do, because they make, you know, you're making plays. For the most part, banks are making plays in real estate. They're making plays in different kind of small businesses, right? They're making choices. Right. And those are the interesting things. As a regional bank, they're very much in the mindset of how do I capitalize communities, right? And how do I do that in a really smart way so that I have a chance to just maintain myself as a bank? You know, because that's the whole point, right? Community banks are the lifeblood of small business, will always be, right? And so that's why things get corrupted when you have the Marus of the world. Right, because they're not funded the same way, right? Yeah, and they're not even close. And they do, and they don't have those prescriptions, and they make really shitty. They make very shitty lenders, right? They don't know how to assess risk. They don't go in that, do that, and stuff. And so they're running, thinking that they're undoing these things. But you're in this way of saying, but on the other hand, you look like you're stuck in the mud. Right. When you're running just a good, solid business and you don't really want to be the turtle, right? The turtle is not going to win the race here. Right. So
right. You
have to be somewhat fluid in that whole thing. And that's what makes it from drinking it from a fire hose from where you are. Right. But it's so relevant to what we do. Right. Because it is that balance of fundamentals and knowing what we're doing, but also willing to push the edge by way of creativity, because otherwise you'd just be boring. Right. That's very similar. I mean, for me,
I did go through a little bit of imposter syndrome, which we talk about here a lot, mm-hmm. as you can imagine. So that's been, I hadn't had that feeling in a long time. So that was, and you know, that's like a personal thing. You just have to get past and get through, but it's real. And we go through it in this industry all the time when we are the best at what we do, but then having to actually say it and stand in front of people and quote, prove it sometimes, you know, it's that awkward feeling of, yeah, I know. Okay. I'm good. But I definitely felt it as of recent, just because I'm not from this industry, but then I look around and I think I know more about business and like making relationships and making this work than most of the people that know the intricacies and the fundamentals of whatever. So that's been an interesting challenge also. It definitely puts you back on your heels a little bit, like, okay, still got to move forward, but it feels different.
Yeah. Fresh eyes, man. Fresh eyes are for sure the challenge, right? I mean, because do you know the intricacies of the terminology and having lived it and kind of the vernacular? And I'll never forget joining the investment bank, and I went to work in asset-backed securities, for Christ's sake. And I was a lawyer. Like, I didn't know the first thing. I didn't even know what a bond was, right? And so everyone is walking around talking, you know, all these, because bonds are not easy. And they're speaking, you know, in bond speak. And I'm like, okay, I understand the words you're saying, but I have no clue what the fuck you're saying.
Right. Oh, I literally printed an email last week, and then I actually took a screenshot of it so I could blow it up onto a piece of paper and landscaped it so I could write what each thing meant so I could actually read it back to understand what the hell it said. I understood all the words on the page. I had no idea how to make them come together.
No. And it just takes time. It's like anything else. It's like learning a language. You just have to take the time to do it and learn it. But that doesn't mean that your perspective on how those things come together won't give you things, because just your mindset of flow and process and longevity of ultimately with a culmination, those folks don't understand, right? They don't get that just because a client stays with you forever or you're maintaining that you're not actually running a process every single time.
Speaking of process, this will actually make everyone laugh, but I kind of want to bring it up because it tells us that we should stop and look at our businesses, whether we're multi-app or single app. But when I first started, about week two, I started to stress how important picking up the phone was and like staying connected to our customers. And if they're asking for something, what are they really asking for? And, you know, digging deeper and making a phone call after two emails instead of just this back forth. And I was realizing that no one was doing it. And so I reminded everyone again. And then I realized that as I sit in my office, I can hear down the hall to like where the rest of my team is. And they're always on speakerphone. And I'm like, why are we talking on speakerphone? It's impersonal. It sounds like we're in tunnels. So I kind of started like every time the phone rang, I'd kind of get up and walk around or print something or do whatever. Well, I discovered that we don't have phones. Right? They don't have the ability to physically pick something up.
Right.
They either have to grab a headset really quick and scramble, or they have to sit with their headset on all the time.
Right.
And I was like, well, no wonder they're literally phone adverse, because it's like, we thought we did something to simplify that actually did not make our business better.
Right.
And how often did I do that in my business where I told, you know, people like, hey, this is what we're going to do, but it didn't really make my business better at the end of the day. I thought that it was because now everyone's got a headset, whatever. I literally said to the IT guy, we're not playing Fortnite, dude. Like,
yeah.
I don't need everyone walking around with headsets on communicating with each other like that. Like, this is a business. And so when I said, I started walking through the building, because most people remote work or, you know, they're kind of hotel desk or whatever. And so I started looking for phones, thinking I'll just steal them from the rest of the building, like I did the plants in my office. Right. And there are no phones. And one of the top guys in commercial lending, big, huge goals, like triple digit millions of dollars. He goes, hey, what are you looking for? I said, I'm looking for phones. He goes, oh my God, if you find one, get me one.
It's crazy.
I literally went to my boss, the president of the market, and was like, dude, I need phones.
Yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, well, they took everyone's phones. I'm like, yeah, no, like these people are the equivalent of like customer care call center. Right. Like,
yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I mean, we all do that stuff every day, all day. And you think that, you know, the point of it is to what end? Efficiency, right?
Right. And we do it in our businesses all the time. I mean, I can tell you that I lost customer touch when the ability to set up just auto payments and like this generic reminder to pay me came out. And then I turned those off of HoneyBook. And I remember the day that I did, because I realized like I'm asking you to invest and spend all this money, and here I'm just sending you what literally is the most generic shit you've ever seen.
Yeah. Well,
but I mean, I'm telling you, we're not generic.
Yeah. I mean, I love that too, because I stopped Calendly. I did it for like a hot minute and I thought that helped, but then it was just annoying as shit, right? Because at the end of the day, people booked and whatever, it was just this impersonal stuff. There's something about saying, I'll talk to you then, right? And that's just, yeah. I mean, efficiency, sometimes you just get, but other times you just got to go through it, right? And theoretically it's supposed to work for you, but it just doesn't. I mean, you got to do that. I mean, Andrew, you're kind of the queen of that, right? So it's about personal, right? Personal, personal, personal. Yeah, well, that's a level you're talking about.
Few weeks.
Yeah. What's that?
I said, it's been a crazy few weeks.
Yeah.
You know, I started out with 4 clients that looked, not clients, sorry, 4 leads that looked fantastic. One of them is something that I haven't, it's producing a full conference for 3,500 people. Those are muscles and tools I haven't used in years.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting and great and fun opportunity to do something different. But of all four leads, it was the one that I wanted the least.
Right.
It was the one that would pay me the most, but the one that I wanted the least. And the one that I wanted the most, we went to contract. And as I'm talking them through it, the groom is telling me, if we had to move it up, if we had to do it closer, if we had to do this in 8 weeks, could we? And so the process of digging, his mom is really sick.
Wow.
And he's walking this line of, do we push to get married before she dies? Do we wait to see if we just wait her out, which is what they've been doing for a year. They got engaged, she got sick. They've put it off now 18 months to start planning. And he's like, you know, do we just wait until she dies, but she keeps hanging on? But then what is it like to have a wedding if she's too sick to travel? And we had the conversation and I was like, I don't think you guys should get married.
Yeah.
And that was the one that I wanted the most because they had a great budget and the bride and I were really aligned and had a great vision and all those things. And I said, I don't think you're going to enjoy this process. I think you're doing it because you feel like you have to, because what does it say if we've been engaged for 2 years and we haven't planned anything? And I don't think anyone is going to have the experience that they want. And I'm a whore for the dollar and I fucking want the money.
Right.
But I don't really want to take you down this path because I don't feel good about it. And they were really grateful. They were grateful to get permission to not have to get married.
Right.
And we've been keeping in touch, which is, you know, fantastic. The conference ends up booking me in two phases, which is weird. Location services first. So paying me to do a location review, because what if they don't come to Vegas?
Yeah.
If they go to another market, then they'll be using another planner, which makes sense.
Right.
But they wired me my full payment for that part of the contract, but didn't sign the contract. And I kept going to them saying, I need this. And the lawyer said, we're good. This email will suffice. And I was like, no, it doesn't for me. I said, you know, I need a contract because like I said, and to be totally candid, like you just wired me quite a large sum of money and there's nothing in writing that we've agreed to manage my scope, your responsibility, like there's nothing. And he complained that I was being difficult, nitpicky. And, you know, small business, I was like, look, I'm a small business, but I'm a serious one. And you as the lawyer, you as the leadership team should be grateful for the fact that I'm paying attention because it's an indication of like who I am and what I do and how I work. And like, technically based on your email, I could literally send you the research I've done right now. And I can say I'm done. That's what I consider to be location services. Yeah. I don't have to take you another step further. So gave me a really great opportunity to kind of wrestle with a lawyer a little bit, which I enjoy. Cause it's what I would have been doing if I wasn't doing this. But also gave me the opportunity to have great conversations with like the owner and the CMO and to really kind of show the like what I'm made of and how I think and the fact that I do think like a business and I am set up like a business and that I might be small, but it's a serious process. So
yeah, I'm going to stop you because language matters. I'm going to stop you. Language matters. I mean, if someone wants to say what I'm about to say and jump in, you're not set up like a business. You're not set up like that way. You are a business and you are serious about what you do. You're not pretending, like you actually are.
Agreed. But I think that what happens is, especially since they made such a unique decision to walk away from a traditional DMC and a meeting planning company after running this conference for several years. And their reasoning was, we want it to be more experiential. We want it to be more creative. We want somebody who has a fresh look in all of these things. But as an industry, we still suffer the burden of having to prove that we're real people, because people either think that we're flaky creatives or we're super small or you're not this and you're not that. Right. And so it's against proving that I am who I am and that I do what I do and that I say what I say and all of those things, against the glass ceiling of, but you're only a wedding planner, but you're only a creative, but you're only in your house, and having the opportunity to go toe to toe with somebody and say, then why, if that's all I am, if I'm only a wedding planner, right, why are you trusting me with a $7 million investment to do a week long production? If I'm only that, then we shouldn't be, I shouldn't be allowed to be in the room. So right, getting to kind of have those arguments is fun for me.
Very fun.
Going back and forth with a potential client that I have now NDAs out the ass with, and you can't use our name and you can't use our branding and you can't say this and you can't say that, and walked away from the table. They walked away from the table at one point after I thought we had come to terms, and came back 2 weeks into it and said, you know, we're going to go in a different direction.
Right.
And I was like, interesting. Like, we've been at this for a month. Mm-hmm. Can I ask who you're going with? And they said, we don't actually have enough. I was like, so you'd rather have no one than me?
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking interesting. Like, what happened between then and now? And they were really resistant to have the conversation. And I was like, okay, fine. Like, we all own our shit. You've made your decision. I wish you the best. I wrote everyone thank you notes. Like, thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for the consideration. Wish you the best. Boom. And then I sent a separate dedicated message to the admin, who has been a fan of mine for years, who I met about 5 years ago at a conference. And I said, hey, I just want you to know personally, like, it meant so much that you were an advocate for me and that you championed me. And no matter what direction you go in, I wish you the best.
Right.
And she called me on her personal cell phone that night. And she's like, I'm so upset. I'm devastated. And like, gave me this whole big thing. And I was like, interesting. So I got all of this other information. And I was like, all right, see what happens. It took another 3 weeks. They came back around. We're having another conversation. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen with anyone. I have a, and I'll.
Where are we with that one? So have you had that conversation yet, or you haven't had it yet?
No, we've had a conversation. And I think we're in a fantastic place, but you just don't ever know. Like,
no.
Everything is done. Everyone has blessed it, but now we're back in legal, and legal has some points of issue with my contract and with things that I want that I am not going to give up. And
till the die on.
And I said to them, I was like, here's, I can give up all of these things. These 2 points are mine and I cannot give them up, and I will not walk away from them. And either you make it work or you don't. But like, this is where I can't cross the line. So we'll see what happens there. But debating, I've gotten 2 what appear to be very quality leads from people at Engage. And I haven't been to Engage since 2019, since my father died. And it's very interesting that they're coming from Engage, like, now that I'm not there. For years I went, I got nothing. And now I've gotten 2 quality leads in the process of talking to both. But for 10 years, I didn't get event leads through Engage. And now that I've taken this break, I'm getting them and I'm saying, like, is it that absence makes the heart grow fonder? Is it the change in the work that I've been putting out? Is it a combination of the two? Is it that people are looking for something other? Like, everybody is seeing—
Not one, two, and three.
Okay.
Not one, two, and three for sure.
I'm just trying to figure out where they're suddenly, like, why is—
You've been doing the work. You've been, because of the work, you've been being able to do things that are other. People notice that what you're doing is outside of their realm and they're taking notice of it, right? And there's a small enough community where you do have a lot of people that you do work with, the Jordans of the world and other players that are there or have worked with you. And then, you know, you just come up in topic of conversation, right? And there's just, that is a natural for me. So it is not about you not being there. Distance, that to me isn't it. It's more about you're doing the work, right? Think about what has happened in the time that you haven't been there, right? You've done an installation. You've amped up the size of the largest wedding you ever did when you were there is X. And now the largest wedding you've ever done is TEDx, right? So the whole point of this is, like, you have become something other. Right. And as you become something other, people clearly talk about you. And, you know, obviously Brian didn't go this last time, but there's a lot of people that are about that, that are noticing and watching and learning. Right. And, you know, the other part too is, like, you know, they're, if anything, the people they put up there, no matter what, are just regurgitations of the same thing. Even this time where they're supposedly, like, facilitators and negotiations, my hearing, and maybe I did normally because I'm hearing in a funnel, right, is that it's the same old, right? It's just this permutation of a theme. And, you know, when you talk in a bubble, you can't expect people to be able to think outside of it, right? And that's the whole point of what you've done, right? So you've taken it further. Right. And look at what's fascinating to me is, like I said, you know, after the installation, different things are going to come to you and allow you to keep spreading, right? And keep doing it. And clearly they also want you back, right? For the installation, right? I mean, that part.
I'm not.
What was that?
The CFO and the CMO, everyone at Aria has been moved around.
Okay.
And so they've been moved out to other properties and we had a conversation and the new leadership team is like, there's no reason to be paying an outside artist when we have people internally.
Mm-hmm.
The team that did it would like me to come back, but they can't seem to put together the budget. They presented the budget to the new CFO who was like, we're not, like, your entire team exists for this. You go do it. But I did meet with their executive VP yesterday because they presented me with another project to do instead. So not doing the installation right now, but they presented me with an opportunity to do a corporate consulting project for them and to kick up to MGM Resorts totally. Yeah. So there's a lot of there. It's weird because I have fewer weddings right now than I ever did.
Right.
The weddings themselves, that there's a shift in style that people are doing. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not doing as many of, like, the big, huge towering things. There's a containment happening.
There has to be.
But most of the really interesting work that I have, most of the highest dollar work that I have is not for a specific wedding.
Yeah. Could have called that ball.
Yeah, but I don't, I kind of like Katie. I love doing something that is other. I love doing something that is different. I love painting myself into a corner and seeing, like, this is interesting. Am I going to get out? I find that exciting. And maybe it's because I come from, maybe it's because, like, I'm a little, I see you, but like me, like, I tried to explain to my son the other day, I said, you know, I come from a place where my entire life felt like triage from the time I was seven. Always fixing catastrophe, waiting for another ball to drop, wondering what was going on. And so like calm and chill is not always my, it's an uncomfortable place for me to be, but I'm in the gym 7 days a week. I'm eating better than I've ever eaten. I'm going to Italy 2 weeks with my family. I'm speaking Italian a lot more fluently than I did before. I'm spending dedicated time with my kids. I'm writing 2 new books. Like I'm doing stuff that makes me feel like a newbie, but also like there's an excitement of what can I learn? What can I do? Where can I fail? And how can I bring it back? And so that kind of stuff is really interesting. But I will always have a place for like the Jess and Robs of the world and wanting to tell that story.
Yeah. And you will always be able to do it. Right. That's the whole point. Right? The whole point is like it's all the same. It's all one, right. It's just the question of how you wouldn't want to tell it. So what's so fascinating to me that the corporations are resonating is because you are showing the power of relationship. You've always shown that, right. The power of emotional intelligence, the power of being able to say the story is more than the thing. Right. And that's going to be your evergreen, right? That's the whole point. It's the tapestry of the story is what matters. And so you're just being able to do that over and over and over again is that's the makes the difference between, yeah, you have all the, you have to have all the technical capabilities. Let's not get ourselves out there. If you weren't talented, who cares? Right. But you are. So that only gets you that gets you in the door. But what keeps you in the door is your ability to tell a different story, right? And to make it more resonant and more like, oh, that was fascinating. Right. So the thing for me that's fascinating about that is when you uncap those who see you in one way, because think about it, 2019, you were a wedding planner. 99% of what you did was weddings. Right. And so what's my next wedding? And that was my single piece of revenue. Right. Was like weddings. Right. And so you might have had a little bit of education, but not a whole lot. And it certainly wasn't going to pay the bills. And you had a little consulting, but not a whole lot. Right. And so now, like any one of your paths you could take and that would pay all your bills, right? And so because you have these things that are all based off this foundational piece of emotional intelligence, you're going to go wherever you want to go, right? And so that means you get to be open to whatever's in front of you, right? Not have to say as a business plan that you're going to build a factory, build up capital assets, try to, you know, take over the market and doing all those things in traditional business sense, because it's not going to work. Right. What's going to work is, okay, I'm flexing this part of my emotional intelligence, this part of my ability to see and understand what you can't see. Know that you may not think that a simple dinner or a simple event is that for a corporation or a simple conference is going to make a difference. But the level of difference that it does make, right, is why you're here. Right. The idea that you're going to pay me for that is why you're here. The idea that you're going to see an installation that's going to make people want to be part of this hotel is what you can keep doing. It's just going to keep going, right? The part is, I think you've made the steps from, you know, if it's a 10 step journey, I think you think you've made 6 steps. I'm trying to tell you, you've made 2.
No, Sean, historically have, Andrew just said, like the spend in weddings is going down, but like what I'm watching, like my market here, and I'm seeing corporate swing.
Sorry, I don't think that the spend in weddings is going down. But what it is like the thing that people are asking me for, I've been known for 8 years for like big florals, big over the top, big installations. People aren't saying I want to spend less money, but they are saying I want restraint.
Yep.
I want to pull that back.
They have to.
Quality, but they're not looking like I got a phone call on Saturday and they booked me yesterday. And they're part of the tribe that owns the Palms here in town. Money is not an issue. And they're young, but they're like, we want to make sure that when it comes to the floral and the design, like that we're reining in, which.
Right. So like what you're ours. So I call it the great Texas porterhouse or, you know, the petite Wagyu filet from Japan. Right. So the point of this is like you can fly in that petite Wagyu filet and put it on a plate and not tell anybody about it until after the fact. and you would be seen as being restrained. Or you could go fly in that Texas Angus, which is amazing, put a big old honking prime rib that looks like, you know, you're just like everybody's in opulence, and people are like, wow, that was a big steak, right? So the point of it is Wagyu costs 10 times what the Angus is, and that's the world we live in now. It's like rich people have to spend their money, but there's always a deep sensitivity to, they can't look out there now, right? You can't have 150,000 people lose their jobs in tech alone. You can't have, you know, SVB, First Republic, and Signature go broke, right? And then Wall Street being, you know, because must be very specific. While all the vice presidents in your world, Katie, while all the vice presidents, even director level and associates, are going to take it in the shorts this year for sure, right? And they did last year, right? They're absolutely positively not going to affect MD and above level, right? Those people are still going to make their money, and they're going to get paid stupid dollars. And that's just how it's going to be. And so, and if they're off 10%, you're talking somebody who made 35 million instead of 40, right? So we're still talking about wealthy people making crazy, these kind of wealthy people making crazy numbers. So they can't be seen as, you know, basically partying while Rome burns, right? So they're going to dial it back. But the point that is a really amazing and important point for you, Katie, and what Andrew's telling you is exactly the accuracy. They're still going to spend their money. It's still going to be stupid money that they're going to spend. You're just not going to see it, right? You're not going to see it in the way that you are accustomed to seeing it, right?
But, yeah, that was a big trend when I went to Interior Design Market, when the economy was suffering, and there was a period where it was like, okay, we're going to make it look good and you're going to spend a lot of money, but it's just not going to look like you did. I remember that was a big discussion for a long time.
Yep. It's really disappointing though.
Yeah.
Like, for somebody like me who wants to do the whole thing, and I want to build and I want to create and I want to come up with, you know, well, why can't I hang it from the sky? And why wouldn't I build you a forest? And how about this? It's different, and it's also, again, forcing me and teaching me to do things outside of my normal skill set, and say, if it's not about volume, if it's not about size and length and width and girth and all of those things that suddenly sound like I am not talking about a wedding design, but if it's not about the sheer magnitude and size of it, what other elements can I deploy that convey and create and elicit emotion that aren't as overt?
Yeah.
So it's a whole new ball game for me as well. And what's funny is I'm also dealing with vendors and people who have an idea, a perception of who I am and what I do and who my clients are and how they feel and how they will be charged. And I'm having to tell them, no, that's not the world we're currently living in. And you can't live there and you can't operate there. And if you do, you simply can't have this business. So it's a lot of really interesting, weird. It feels very like a seminal shift, with the understanding that in 5 years, we're going to shift again.
But that, so like from my floral perspective, like when you say that, like if my business, and I'm saying my business was set up at the time, right? But if my business isn't set up right and I'm not getting paid for my creative, I need you to produce opulence because my ability to make money is based solely on selling the widget over and over again instead of my creativity. Whereas once I started getting paid my creative and then the client paid the invoice plus X for my processing and things like that, processing of the actual physical floral, I didn't care if you wanted one rose on every freaking table. I designed and got paid to design.
Right. Yeah. That's what people aren't doing. I have a tasting in like 30 minutes. So together.
And we'll stop. That's took the words out of my mouth for sure, because if you have to go against model in order to make money, or go against trend in order to make money, it becomes, you're fighting your business, right? And so what you say is, if I can always find alignment regardless of wherever things are, and I'm still going to make my money no matter what, then you're going to be insulated from it, right? No matter up and down. Now, what that means is you're going to leave money on the table. go-go times, you're going to leave money on the table. Just going to be, right? And that's just okay. Because you're going to go like this all the way through, no matter what. And some people are going to go like this. And you're just like, it's better for me to go like this, right? Because I can create and do what I want to do, and things will be the way it needs to be. So it's quite remarkable. Well,
it's been a weird feeling, though. I mean, I talked to a girlfriend of mine, and she had her biggest year last year ever. She's a planner here in town. I adore her. She did about 20 events, which makes me want to come out of my skin. But she's like, you know, I'm doing all these things. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. She's like, and I'm wanting to scale, because she's like, I had the busiest year. I did the best work. I made the most money, and I was the least happy. She's like, I didn't feel like I was giving it my best. I felt like I was just on the wheel. She's like, I was cashing these checks that I didn't always feel were valid or completely earned. And she's like, and I looked at my life and said, like, I'm not happy. Every other area of my life has been happy, but these last 8 weeks with these clients, that the closing process takes so much fucking longer, and the legalities take so much longer, and the 3-date minimum for sex is now 2 months. Like, that has been a challenge, and mentally and emotionally, because I'm used to people calling me and just being like, take my wallet
and go read Old Man in the Sea.
Yeah, I remember. I know.
It is what it is.
I know.
It is what it is. And I know it's frustrating and hard, and I appreciate that it's much better to get it done, move on, and be in that place. But like, when you're playing a different game with different people and doing different things, let's go back to the part of like, the reason I said what I said and interrupted you in the beginning is this very reason. You're not like a business. You are a business. And having to show that to yourself and to those people around you and living that idea is going to be those things that it's an investment in people coming to understand that this is what it takes. And you won't always have to do that. The part that probably is frustrating for you right now is you think that this is going to be the new normal. It actually isn't. It's the adjustment. It's the transition. And people will appreciate your ability to go through this process with them. And then they'll realize it's not really fruitful to do that. And not that they're just going to cave to your demands. It's just that it's going to go faster. Right.
The interesting thing, though, is it's not, and I told Tony this, I said, here's the thing. Any 2 of the 6 events that were floating,
mm-hmm.
if I signed any 2 of them financially,
right,
I'm good through 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in terms of have I covered my family's basic needs,
yeah.
which is always the big concern, yeah. like vacations and the purses and the shoes, the stuff that I love will be my other events, but can I keep my kids fed and in their activities? And that, it wasn't the financial, it's the emotional need I have to work and to create and to be engaged and to be bending the world to my will and to be doing the things that I want to do, because I don't feel like myself if I'm not.
Yeah.
And that became, so that's when over the summer, over January, February, I shifted and I said, okay, if I'm not doing the exact thing that makes me feel alive and that makes me feel like me, and I know I'm not going to be happy doing a B-list version of it.
Mm-hmm.
What else do I do in my life to shift? And whether it was the gym, the house, writing, like all the other things, every single day since January in the morning, when I do my own like meditation and visualization and all of the stuff that is probably a little out there for most people. But I always say to myself, the business will provide, because the business always does. The work that is meant for me will find me, because it doesn't happen without me. Like, I go through all of those things, but it's still in my head. I'm like, pick me.
Yeah.
Love me.
Of course.
Invite me to the party. I want to be the prom queen.
Yeah. But you stop yourself, and that's a good thing.
Huh?
But you stop yourself, and that's a good thing. Because then you're
pissed. No, I'm not. I'll be a fucking bitter bunny, and then I'll do shit work. I can afford to be a bitter bunny for my kids and my husband because they deserve better.
I'm just freaking excited to hear you're going on another trip because you went on the first trip ever a year ago, and you already committed to another one.
Oh, yeah. We've never been overseas. I've never been to Europe because the first time I had an opportunity to go, my ex-husband had a Korean passport and travel was really difficult for him because he had been born in Busan. So he couldn't get it worked out and we didn't go. Then we booked a family trip and my sister got cancer. So we were like, oh, we'll wait till she's better. Then we booked another one and my dad had a heart attack.
Yeah.
And we're like, after surgery, and then he got arrested and the government's like, oh, you can't leave the country. You have to stand trial for these people that you killed. And I'm like, ridiculous. But after that, the only thing I did was go to prison. So yeah. Like all my vacations were prison. So now I'm getting to go to a place that's not actually a jail.
No. Have a good time with your family. It'll be really fun. So.
Oh, they're so stoked. And we've got every single day booked. We booked the trip in January and decided we're going to do it and we're going to pay the whole thing off before we go. So we paid everything off before we went. So now all I need is spending money. And I when it comes to my family, I'm in a place since last year where I want 2 weeks out of the year, I want to give my kids 2 weeks of yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we can eat there. Yes, we can sleep in. Yes, you can have that toy. Yes, you can buy that thing. I just want to create an area and a space in life where it's just all about saying yes to experiences and opportunities.
That's so great. It's a great lesson. So, yeah. Yay. I love it. Gotta go. Bye.